Welcome to the RUF SCAD podcast. Martin Antoon here, campus minister with RUF, where we explore the intersection of faith and creativity. And this month we've got Sarah Schmidt with us. Sarah, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So give us the very basic stuff. Where is home? What brought you to SCAD, et cetera?
Well, I grew up in Texas. I live in Savannah pretty much full time now. And the what brought me to SCAD question has been brought up relatively recently, and I really had to think about it not that long ago. I think the way that I first heard about SCAD is one of the girls that I went to school with in like the first and second grade exclusively, then we switched schools. And she ended up at SCAD, and she graduated from the fibers department in 2019. So like I barely overlapped with her because I transferred in late. And I think she is how I like initially found out at SCAD about SCAD. Ironically, SCAD was like my second choice school in this transfer process. Before I was at SCAD, the degree that I spent the most time on was business. And I was like, well, if I'm going to have a boring degree, I might as well go to a really cool school. And so I really wanted to go to the University of Chicago, and I didn't get accepted, which it's fine. It's not like I was already in Chicago when I found that out. And then after getting that rejection letter, I was visiting Savannah, and I just really liked the city. Obviously, you know, the Spanish Moss and like the Queen Stick Victorian buildings.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going to come to an art school to study business. So I was like, well, I could just study architecture. That's fine. Like that's in my wheelhouse. And, I got here for my first quarter and I couldn't get into Architecture 100. And that girl that, I knew from my hometown was like, oh my gosh, Sarah, you're like an industrial design person. You should try an industrial design class, like be an industrial designer. And I took one ID class and I was like, all right, I think I could do this. And it pretty much stuck. I had this crazy professor that I actually have now for a couple classes. And he's kind of a megalomaniac, but like I was totally starstruck after ID 100. And I've been doing weird stuff in the name of product design ever since.
That's awesome. All right, so if I had no context for any of that, I would hear industrial design and think like, oh, that's probably a Nine Inch Nails album. What is industrial design? Give us the like one sentence definition of what that means.
Well, I wish it was a Nine Inch Nails album. I feel like that would really up my street cred.
Trent Reznor. You heard it here first for sure.
Yeah, so industrial design was actually born out of architecture. And it's really difficult to explain. My mom tells people weird things about it all the time. Most recently, the best definition that I've heard is the methodology of architecture applied to products. So you're looking at like a lot of research and a lot of behavioral information and like the way that people interact with spaces and items. And then all of that with, you know, good form and like what makes something usable, what makes it good as a product. And from there, you can apply that to anything from transportation. So basically anything that will take you from one place to another, packaging, general products, almost anything that you can spend money on. Conceivably, an industrial designer could have been working on it.
So that almost sounds like an intersection of a lot of other different fields, like the common space where a lot of those things reside. It's like, it sounds like there's aspects of architecture and almost like aspects of sociology. You're describing like research about behavior and things like that, and then functionality. Is that fair to say that it intersects just a lot of different things into like an experience of use?
Yeah, definitely. I think industrial design, I mean, technically there's another field that at SCAD, the major is called design management,
mm-hmm.
which it's actually doing that like primary research that we were talking about earlier, where you're talking to users with interviews and stuff like that. And so technically that's like a different field. If you're an industrial designer at a large enough like firm or company, you won't be doing much of that because there will be a whole team doing that. So the research is probably like secondary once you're no longer a student. But other than that, really, it's a super broad kind of like shotgun blast at the design world. And basically whatever you want to do with it, you should have some tools to at least start.
So how did you get into it? What prompted your decision to go that route?
I had no idea what it was when I came to SCAD. That friend of mine recommended, or she just told me that I seemed like an industrial design like major.
What was she basing that on? What was she saying, like, Sarah, because of this, you should do industrial design?
I have no idea.
Did she see the steel shirt? Was that what it was?
It probably was.
That's still, as an aside, one of the top five best shirts I've ever seen. It's just like the steel, like, chainsaw logo.
Oh, yeah, I'm actually wearing it
today. Oh, that's awesome.
And I thought you were reading my shirt, and then I remembered I had a jacket on. No, I don't. I honestly have no idea. I think just because, I mean, actually, I guess she and I did go to school like for a couple years, like in late middle school and like early high school later on. And so she's like, oh, Sarah, you're so smart, like all this stuff. And I have no idea why she told me that. And I should probably like call her up and ask her. My assumption is that it has to do, like, it was based in like the fact that like I used to help her with her homework all the time. But I have no idea. I have no idea. Maybe she just thought it was a cool degree and couldn't do it, like already committed to the fibers thing. And so she wanted me to like
do it vicariously.
Could,
yeah, that's right.
And I almost had no idea what it was when I took that first class, too. I was like, why not?
Yeah. Well, so given that it's so broad as you've gone through it, have you started to gravitate towards, like, specifics within that field that you've been drawn to?
Yeah, I think one of the things that is pretty integral, I guess, to industrial design is, like, mass production, which can be a really good thing in certain areas. But realistically, like everything, almost everything that we purchase, especially in America, is mass produced. And it is just not super responsible from like a material standpoint. There's a lot of waste. It's really only efficient if you're producing like tens of thousands of things. It's really not efficient for like the use of like human labor because you have a ton of minimum wage jobs for a ton of people in a, like a factory that require little to no skill, and there's no incentive for a company making millions of plastic lawn chairs to pay, you know, the lawn chair costs them like 2 cents to make. They're going to sell it for $20 at Lowe's. Why pay the guy like watching the robot do the work?
Sure.
Anything. And so once I like really got a grasp on that, I realized that like, while there are a lot of things that I love about industrial design, I've accidentally sort of majored in mass production, which is, you've probably gathered something I'm not super into. So I'd really like to get into more like luxury and boutique, design just because you're looking at like higher quality materials and it's less focused on being as cheap as possible. I really loathe cheaply made products, things that are cheap just for the sake of being cheap, which is super common in America because of the rise of the Kleenex culture, which came after World War II. Which is a whole other thing.
I was about to say, it sounds like you've done some study and know a lot about why that bothers you as much as it does.
Yeah. businessman. I had a few economic courses. So yeah, I'd really like to get into like more of the like luxury design, or like architectural stuff. I'm pretty tapped out on school now. I'm about to graduate. And so for a hot minute, I was thinking about getting a professional architect's license, but that would require me to do some more school. So with industrial design, I could work in aspects of like architecture and like restoration and stuff like that, that I would be super into. I've taken a couple classes for that, but I'm not going back to school yet. I'm not going to say never because I know better by now, but, and then most recently what I've been into is medical device development. And the thing that I like about medical device development is it really needs to be mass produced for a lot of the stuff. We were just talking about that project that I'm working on with the neonates, which are babies. So the baby project.
Sarah's making sure I understand all of the professional terminology.
That has been that class that I've been doing with the neonates has been a great, really intense segue into medical device development. And the nice thing about it is that, because we have this really stellar industry resource specialist working with the class, he has spent his entire life basically building a phenomenal network of pediatricians. So for like our midterm and final reviews, and almost at our leisure, we have an international panel of doctors and scientists who are excited to talk to us and want to talk to us about what we're doing, because they care so much about the field of neonatology and pediatrics. So that's been super awesome. I think most of the people at RUF know by now I'm also doing a medical device for my senior project, the walkers, which everyone helped me out for. So
I've been hearing a lot about that.
Thanks, guys. So looking to the future, the goal right now is to try to get into the medical device development industry. I think there's a few things about the medical industry that I'm not down with, but there's always going to be sick people. So hopefully that's a little bit more stable job than some of the luxury markets for right now.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've always enjoyed about just when you talk about the things that you're making and why you do it is that you have a specific vision for what you want to do, but you can also situate that in kind of a larger landscape of like, this is why I want to do it, and this is sort of the value that I would like to see added, and how these skills can sort of take that and implement it into something that actually contributes in a very specific way. And I've always found that you've been able to do that really well. And one of the things that we try to cultivate, you know, I've talked about this within RUF, is just that intersection of what it is that we're doing with our creativity and then why we do it, sort of our faith commitments and how that translates into the things that we do. So let's talk to that just a little bit, I guess maybe to set the foundation of that, your story as it relates to your faith. Can you think of either like a pivotal moment or when you became a Christian or sort of what that genesis looked like?
Yeah. Also, I'm just realizing like earlier I was talking about how mass production is not like a great use of resources. And the reason that I feel so strongly about that is because in the Bible, you know, we're called to be a good steward of our resources. And so that's one of like my big bases for like being anti-fast fashion and all that.
You know, and I feel like that actually is a thing that gets glossed over pretty substantially. Like if we get back to the creation mandate, that's part of what it is. It's like you have dominion over this created order.
Yeah.
And part of dominion is to take care and cultivate the beauty and to be responsible and not wasteful of it. And for whatever reason, I'm kind of with you on that. I mean, I'm not nearly knowledgeable enough to speak to like big issues of consumption and production. That's your domain, not mine. But I do know the premise and the cultural mandate all the way back in Genesis, like that principle is absolutely there. Absolutely.
Yeah. And the thing, it's pretty trendy right now to talk about like the economic or not economic, economic with the earth and
yes,
I can't think of the you know, like eco-friendly
as it
stuff.
Relates to the environment.
Yeah, sustainability. I don't know. I have lost all of the words today. Yeah, so that's really, really trendy that people are talking about, like, you know, use your reusable water bottle and stuff like that. And we've been seeing a growth in that for a long time. But it's a lot less glamorous to talk about how people are being used as a resource. And so that's one of the things that I am really passionate about. And so I guess, like, one of my goals, like, as a Christian working in the creative field is to make sure that I'm focusing my efforts on solving problems that are ultimately going to help people. And not that I think that I'm going to save the world, but I am going to do everything in my power to avoid working for like a corporate box store. Not trying to name any names. Although I definitely called out someone with the plastic chair, so maybe I should just, like, censor that. just because of everything that we've talked about so far. And these are things that I've really become aware of more so since moving to Savannah. I've definitely gone through a lot of ebbs and flows with my faith and where I've been at spiritually. I was really blessed to grow up in a Christian home with really biblical theology and a really strong understanding of a lot of things. But ultimately, like, there's always just going to be holes. No education is ever going to be perfect on anything. So it's been quite the journey for me. Being able to attend IPC here in Savannah has been amazing for me. This is the first time I've really been like plugged into such a Christian community, both with RUF and IPC. So I would say that's been a big turning point for me. A lot of things in my life have changed since being in Savannah. I mean, it's not my first time away from my parents or anything. I moved out when I was 18, so I've been out of their house for a hot minute. but Savannah has just been a pretty unique place for me. I mean, I've had good churches, other cities that I've lived in, but the community that I've found in Savannah has really been pretty transformative to me. So.
Man, that's awesome to hear. This may be kind of an abstract question, but what is it that has just felt different about your experience in churches and Christian communities here that just that seems so different compared to your experience in the past?
Well, up to a point, my approach to life, my own life, is just rip off the Band-Aid. So I moved from my job in Dallas, Texas, across the country to Savannah, Georgia, by myself with what I could fit in the back of my car, to arguably, not even arguably, definitively the worst apartment I've ever lived in. It was awful. Had a great balcony that I didn't appreciate, and I regret that now, but so it was really hard when I first got here. I was going to a different church when I first got to Savannah, and then I, through like a variety of events and circumstances, I just fell out of going to church. I mean, I wasn't in Savannah for 6 months. I mean, I came here for winter quarter, and then I studied abroad for spring quarter, and just decided to like pick up and live in Santa Fe for the summer.
as one does, apparently.
You know, if not in your early 20s, when?
That's fair.
And since I'd already been gone from Savannah so long, I was like, you know what? Like, I didn't really have any attachments anywhere. But I think for me, I came to IPC one Sunday just to visit after I had, like, fallen away from going to church for a while, even though I was back in Savannah. And Evan and Jamie Gear, like, swarmed me with hospitality. I had walked to church that day, and they invited me to their home for lunch. And so I got into the car with a total stranger that I'd never met before and went to their house to have lunch with them, which was super out of my comfort zone. And I think it's that kind of hospitality that I've seen from both IPC and RUF that has been so different for me here. So
there's something about just the embodiment of all the things, all the values that, you know, we hold to be true in Christianity, that when they're placed in the context of a community, it's like it resonates with us in a different way. It's not just intellectual knowledge, but it's formative.
Yeah. And I think one of the big barriers, well, I don't think, I know, one of the big barriers for me that with being involved in a church community, like in my adult life, was definitely like my social anxiety and like being so anxious about stuff all the time. And there's definitely like a point at which you can attribute that, or at least in my case, can be attributed to just not like trusting in the Lord's timing for things. But it's also kind of hard when, you know, like your heart's racing and you feel like, I got to get out of here no matter what, kind of thing that would lead me to like leave church early and like come in late and all that stuff. And so I have actively been forcing myself out of that for a couple years now. And that's coupled with all the really great people here, been a very different experience. So
what was it like forcing yourself to do what came very unnatural?
I do this to myself all the time. And then I wonder why I'm so stressed out. you know, I don't have an answer other than like, I just force myself to do it. And like, up to a point, as long as I like am committed to doing something, and I like don't give myself an out, I just do it. And then at the end, I'm like, okay, well, I did it.
Can I just say how wonderfully refreshing of an answer that is, to not try to like overly intellectualize it, just to say, I knew it was good and it was difficult, so I figured I should probably just do it. And then I came out on the other side okay. And it was hard, but it was fine.
Yeah.
It's like kind of a beautiful answer.
I feel like that's kind of the story of my life lately, you know? Hopefully it'll be the story of SCAD. It was good. I survived, and now I'm good.
So the plan is wrapping up May graduation?
Yeah, I have 4 more classes after this quarter, which should lead me to be employable as of May 28th, 2021. In case you're wondering, there's 4 months left. SCAD has also ingrained in me this thought process that every clock is a countdown. So
is the graduation one.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as you sort of, I mean, obviously the big one for you is just finishing and graduating, et cetera. But as you start to do the reflective thing and look back over your time at SCAD, I don't know, like, how do you feel like you grew as an artist or as a person, or if you even want to put those two together, like, what ways do you think you changed since you've been here?
I think that one of the things that I'm still not good with is, like, I don't ever refer to myself as an artist, which I don't know, you know, may or may not be objectively true, because I never planned to be in art school. And I have truly been getting by the seat of my pants the entire time. And so I think, if nothing else, I've learned that I can improvise through a shocking amount, which maybe isn't the best takeaway, but you know what?
So that's actually a really interesting point. So you said does that mean you still have a hard time classifying yourself as an artist?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, what if we use the term creative? Does that have the same connotation?
Yeah, I'm like, listen, I never did art classes like as a kid. I really truly believed that when I was graduating high school, I was gonna study nuclear physics.
That was a plot twist for sure. Did not see that coming.
Yeah, so I really thought that I was going to get into like nuclear physics or like a hard science. And it's such a like long roundabout story over several years that I ended up in art school.
I think that's a super interesting point, though. The fact that, because I like rag on people all the time when I tell them that I'm, you know, ministering at SCAD, and they say something to the effect of like, oh, like I'm not a creative person, I'm not an artist or creative. And it's like, I think we've defined the parameters of that very narrowly.
Yeah, definitely.
Because what you're describing is a creative venture. Like, you're, like, creativity is taking something that we see out in the world and fleshing it out in an aesthetic way.
Yeah.
That's my very simple with no thought behind a definition of, like, creativity.
No,
like,
that's
what you're doing, right?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, granted, this is a secular book, and I haven't read all of it. But, half-blindly, going to talk about the artist's way. And it's just like, I don't know, I guess it's a self-help book. but like, it's taking the approach of like learning to be creative and like learning to be creative outside of like substances or, even maybe like outside of how you think about yourself. And what I think is so interesting about this, that is that the author like really subscribes to that concept that everyone is creative. We're just creative in different ways. And so like taking that approach, I think is a lot easier for me to swallow that. Because like, I have no objections to like telling people that like, I'm a creative problem solver, things like that. But if it comes up and someone's like, oh, you're an artist. I'm like, no, I'm really not.
That's so fascinating.
So
it's like, if we go back to the cultural mandate, like we were talking about a minute ago, it's like the assumption embedded in that is it necessitates creativity.
Yeah.
You know, and if we believe that we were made in the image of a God who creates, it's like part of the extension of that is that we're made to be creative.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. As you were talking about that a minute ago, like just sort of how you're defining industrial design, the thing that came to my mind is when you read through Exodus and God's describing the tabernacle, and there's all these specific components that are supposed to do certain things, and they adhere in this collective way that actually benefits the good of his people. He doesn't just do it functionally, though it is functional, but he also gives them specific like descriptions of how they're supposed to make it, and they pick the people that are the best equipped to do all those things. And it's like that kind of, that shows us there's a value within that. Now, like, what you're doing has a different application, but I think the principles are still there, too. It's like, the God of the Bible is one who, yes, makes things functionally because they communicate something to his people, but they also happen in an aesthetic and a beautiful way. It's like, he talks about the types of fruits that they're supposed to engrave on the things that they're making. It's like, that's kind of amazing. And I suspect, like, we would still put that under the umbrella of creatives,
yeah, and definitely.
Artists. So maybe that becomes our mission, right? To broaden the umbrella of what people mean when they say creative,
yeah,
and artists.
I think that's fair. And I mean, every time my small group is probably so sick of this coming up, but every time we talk about like beauty or design, you know, looking at it from God's perspective or like in creation, you know, people, I think, living in like urban environments tend to take it for granted, but I'm like, guys, have you ever been outside? Have you seen a leaf? That is crazy. Because really there's an insane amount of functionality in like every single system that exists, like even so much more within like the human body than we ever realize. And I mean, I wish I would have picked something else to talk about besides the human body, because like, obviously like that your insides are not like super aesthetically pleasing, but like,
maybe it depends on who you ask.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just a lot of beauty in like functionality that we mm-hmm. see, all the time. And I definitely like cut my own metaphor off there, but
I don't know. I mean, like at a certain point, I think we want to recognize there's a category of like a beautiful person, Like, yeah. maybe it's functional on the inside, but aesthetic on the outside as yeah. well. I don't know.
Yeah.
Trying to throw you on there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess it depends on, like, how edgy you are. If you have your little, like, enamel pin of an anatomically correct heart, you know.
Right.
Right. See those at SCAD, so.
So I'll wrap up with two questions. The first one is just kind of things that you're working on your radar right now, kind of nearing graduation. What are some projects on the horizon?
Well, I've got my senior stuff that I'll have for the next 14 weeks. or 13 weeks now. Oh, gosh. If I give myself spring break, it's 14.
I can see the panic setting.
Yeah, so hopefully I'll have that figured out. I do have, like, an initial concept going on that, but I haven't gotten to the point where it's, like, really shareable. And then I'm working on this crazy medical device group project thing with one of my other classes for premature babies born in low and middle income countries to support, like, respiratory health and try to decrease infant death outside of high income countries, which is super exciting because that's, like, a direct line of life saving. I mean, yes, technology, but just, like, a development. There's a direct impact there. And not only does it encompass all of the, like, crazy medical, like, anatomy stuff of, like, learning that, like, a premature baby at a certain point is a Coke can and a half at 24 weeks.
Wow.
That's how it was described to us. Wow. 1.5 Coke cans of baby. And so you've got, on one hand, like, all the anatomy, and then on the other hand, we're trying to figure out how to work without basically reliable, like, electrical infrastructure. Because a lot of these places do have electricity up to a point. It may go out all the time, or, you know, maybe this has the potential to exist in a really rural environment where there's no electrical service. So we're also working on how we can power things and transport things and package things safely and make sure that equipment has to be sterilized so that it's, like, designed intrinsically into the product. And there's so many nuanced steps to that, that it's just really complicated and crazy. So I've been really enjoying the medical device stuff. I'm working on rebuilding my website right now, but it's sarahcschmidt.weebly.com.
Nice.
That's my...
Can we learn more about the project you were just describing as information, or will there be, if anybody wants to learn more about it?
Unless I get roped into a non-disclosure agreement, which I don't think is a possibility at this point in time, unless it's about to go into production. I'm hoping and really, truly counting on being able to publish that as a part of my portfolio. But given that we're sort of working with a lot of different entities and depending on how viable the solutions are that we come up with, there I do see, like, a potential for things to need to be kept private. But hopefully it'll be on my website. Probably after spring break sometime.
Man, that's really amazing stuff, Stan. That's really awesome. All right, so we'll wrap up with last question. Of all the things in Savannah, places and, like, routines and things, what's the one that you have grown to love the most that you will miss the most?
One thing?
Yeah, if you could only pick one, like a place or a thing that you enjoy doing in Savannah.
Okay, I know the weather's been really less than ideal for this activity. But I'm gonna give you a cop-out answer, which is...
You can do that. You're allowed.
Planned outdoor spaces, planned outdoor recreational spaces. So I really, really enjoy Forsyth Park as much as possible. My dog really loves Daffin Park for the dog park. And I really like to go out to Tybee, especially if you've never gone out to Tybee at night and you've always lived in like an urban setting. You can see on a really clear night, you can actually see part of the Milky Way.
You're speaking my language now.
So
did you go out there for the meteor shower in December?
I was 4 a.m. so close. I was going to try to rope someone else into going with me, but I think, when I like checked, it was supposed to be super cloudy and I was like kind of tired and a little sick. And I was like, all right, you know what? Like I'll call it. I've seen a meteor shower before. Also on a beach before, but I wish I would have.
You are correct though, because that was the first time I'd ever been out to Tybee at night, and it is totally different.
Yeah,
it's awesome, but just in a very different way.
Oh my gosh, I love it so much. For anyone that can drive, they should be driving out to Tybee.
Absolutely, it's a tragedy if you graduate in 4 years at SCAD and don't go out to Tybee, especially at night. Totally with you on that one.
Yeah, definitely. So
awesome. Well, Sarah, thanks for joining today.
Yeah, it was fun. It was one of those things that was like out of my comfort zone, but it's over
and
I'm okay.
And it was awesome. Great. Until next time. Thanks, Sarah.
Bye.